time, we begin the segment of Landmark. I'm K2 Romeo India Whiskey, and along with Mel, K2 KEY, we gather people, dispense information, sometimes have a good time. Ham radio is a reasonably complicated hobby, and so people will eventually develop some questions about best antennas, best feed lines, best transmitters, and so on. 25, 26 different kinds of ham radio. 2-meter repeater ham radio, which you listen to, is just one of them. By way of the net, you may find out about the other 24 or 25. A person signs into the TechNet by giving me their call letters, their name, and a confirming yes, which means they do have a question or a comment for the net. A sign-in would sound like this, N2EO, Rich, and yes. So do we have any check-ins? Give me your call letters and name at this time.
N2EO, Rich, and yes.
Yes.
Okay, we got Rich. Who is the second person?
K2MLB, Frank, yes.
Got you, Frank. Okay, we got Rich and Frank. Who else?
This is
QD.
Something QD. Give me that full call.
KB1OQD. Yes.
This is Whiskey 2, Papa November, Juliet, Bob. No.
WS2N, Paul. Good evening, Dick.
This is K2YW. No, and the name is Joe. Just listening.
KB, okay, we got you, Joe. KB1OQD, what is your name, sir?
First name is Rob.
Got you, Rob.
This is K2LJH. Good evening, Dick. How you doing? I haven't spoken to you in a long time.
All right, to hear from you. And we're going to have to find out how that hip is doing. Okay, Sid. And we'll assume Sid's going to have a question for us. So far, we got Rich, Frank, Bob. Bob and Joe and Sid. Anyone else?
C2LIM. No question at this time.
This is N2KDN. Taj. No.
And did you copy WS2N? Paul. Good evening, sir.
Sure did, Paul. Haven't heard from K2KEY tonight. Are you around, Mel?
Yeah, just listening to everybody sign in. Good evening, all. This is K2KEY. Go ahead, Dick.
Yeah, it was awful silent without hearing from him. Okay, we got more than enough people. Let's get rolling. Rich, N2EO, what's the latest in White Plains?
Okay, Dick, I think you mean Whitestone, Queens, N2EO. Okay, Dick, my question is on antennas and feed lines, 75 meters. Myself and Barry, N2MB, have been blowing smoke on 75, and, you know, there's always a way to improve the signal. What we're going to be doing is moving my inverted V up so it clears the house. Right now the apex is at roof level. We're going to be putting a mast up there and get it up above the house. But I wanted to ask you, Dick, a couple of questions. First off, on open wire lines, they've got three different gauges, 14 gauge, 18 gauge, and 20 gauge. My amplifier runs at 8877, quite a bit of power. I've got the 18 gauge on there, and it occurred to me that what is the effect, because you're pulling about 8 or 10 amps of antenna current, I believe. I'm going to the 14 gauge wire line, and also, 10TEC sells a dipole hang-up hook for $10 called the Acrobat. And what it's meant to be used as is a folded dipole made out of ladder line. What they intended for is ladder line feed and a horizontal flat top broken in the center on the bottom only, so it becomes a folded dipole, non-resonant. I wonder if there are any advantages to that, Dick, because I'm thinking the impedance of a folded dipole is more like 300 ohms into the 450 ohm ladder line. That might be an advantage. And what the effect is of the 14 gauge wire over the 18-gauge wire when running a lot of power. Back to that, sorry for the one voice, Dick, and 2EO.
You're sounding pretty good there, Rich, not to worry. Open wire line has got the darn low loss, and on top of that, it's got such beautiful air cooling it. Even if you went to 18-gauge, and imagine if you go to the right reference book, you'll find out what is the loss in dB per 100 feet, and you're not even running 100 feet of the stuff. So a full gallon on 80 meters, if your 8877 was able to put out 1,000 watts, would be under 5 amperes. 5 amperes to 18-gauge wire in open air is not going to damage it. So I think you have the option of running 18-gauge if you wanted to. If you come up with a number with the right reference that it tells you it's got half a dB of loss per 100 feet and you're running 35 feet of it, you can see right away that we're talking about very little loss. The loss has got to be documentable. So, yeah, where you've got the resources, it's nice to have the low loss, the higher strength, and go for the 14-gauge, but if you absolutely had to save yourself some weight or whatever, I bet you the 18 could make it, and that's the way you could look that up. Now, when it comes to the antenna itself, you had a question about the antenna, and I'm not sure that I got that one, so run that one by again, Rich. Go ahead.
Okay, Dick, we're going from a regular dipole to a folded dipole made out of ladder line.
Okay. Folded dipoles made out of ladder line. If I took 300 ohm twin lead and made it into a folded dipole, I end up with something very close to 300 ohm impedance. 600 ohm ladder line. Tell I second. 600 ohm ladder line probably does something similar. The nice thing about the ladder line and folded dipole is that no other impedance matching device is required. Ordinary open wire line, 600 ohm line, requires some way of climbing into the dipole. And the folded dipole strikes me as a nice way to do it. That could work very well. The ladder line as an antenna is probably pretty strong. As the antenna itself on 80 meters, I think I'd like to go to 14 gauge to have the physical strength. And I bet you the bucks involved for the 14 gauge versus 18 gauge is probably small. I think it should work like a charm. What altitude are you going to mount it above the ground? Do you have enough property for an 80 meter full dipole? Or are you going to have to zigzag a little bit? How else are you going to be doing this? And sounds like Barry's going to be climbing a tree pretty soon. N2EO, KQLIW in the second half.
Oh, it's a half-wave inverted V fed with the 18-gauge wire line at the apex level, which is about 30 feet. Goes down to the back bottom, comes down to the front by a fence. We're going to get it up an extra 10 or 15 feet at the apex. Barry is of the opinion that most of the radiating takes place close to the feed point, which is at the roof level. So we're going to be putting up a 10-foot mast, get it up an extra 10 feet. It'll get the whole antenna up an extra few feet. We're going to make it out of, the new one's going to be same dimensions, but it's going to be a landline. It's a folded dipole fed with the 14-gauge landline. Can I take?
Yeah, that sounds like a good arrangement. The current antenna, I take it, is not a folded dipole, so therefore your open wire feed line right now is going straight to a dipole, which implies you probably have a reasonably high standing wave ratio that you have to take care of with your antenna tuner, I'm guessing, and you're going to give me a reinforcement on that one. And now when you go to the folded dipole fed with the open wire line, you're going to need much, much less antenna tuner operation. And the biggest way you're going to see that as a benefit is that as you QSY, you're not going to have to adjust the controls anywhere near as much as you used to. So am I correct on some of those guesses, Rich? Go ahead.
Yes, you are, Dick. Right now it's just a regular dipole with the ladder line attached to it. I come down into the house and I got a 4-to-1 bound by TX Engineering that converts over to coax one about 10 feet of coax to the tuna.
Yeah, another thing you can do that Mel and I were discussing 1 or 2 weeks ago is that bringing the ladder line into the house is a little bit difficult. Mel does it by way of using oil burner and the igniters, they're called. These are these very high voltage porcelain things with a stiff chunk of wire going down the center, and they're intended to act as an igniter for the oil burner, and he brings those through his wall. I think you could also do it by bringing a pair of coax cables through the wall as a way of getting the ladder line into the house. So two pairs of the coax cables side by side, you're not using very many wavelengths of it, so the exact impedance of the coax cable doesn't matter much. You use 75 ohm instead of 50 ohm cable, you come closer to a good impedance match. And whether or not you use the 4-to-1 balun in the house to the rig or to the antenna tuner, or if you happen to have an open wire type antenna tuner with its coupling coil and you feed it directly, that could be a fun arrangement. As you and Barry establish this new antenna, new altitude, folded dipole, let us know how it goes, whether or not you hear more, they hear you more, and so on. Also keep track of what Mel's been doing with his loop antenna inside the house. He's been getting some fantastic performance on reception, and he's just beginning to, I think, experiment with transmitting. And I think the loop inside the house can also transmit. Get a little bit careful as to how close you are to it. But and I think you've got to retune it between transmit and receive if you want to pick up signals. But when he compares his internal loop to the full wave loop, almost 40 feet in the air outside the house, he's getting some fantastic performance with the loop inside. Antennas are fun to experiment with, as you can tell. So keep us informed as it goes. And anything else you want to add to this, Rich? N2EO, K2LIW.
N2MB for a real quickie. N2MB.
Oh, let's pick up. Here we go. Barry. Hey, Barry. You're gonna be getting some good exercise with the tree climbing I see coming. You got it, Barry.
Okay, yeah, I'm in my car. I was listening a second ago, but there was something that I was curious about, and you probably answered it, but I was out of the car at that moment. On a dipole, a regular dipole antenna, stud in the middle, with 50 ohm coax, whatever, I've always had the feeling that antennas radiate from their current points and not so much from their voltage points. I could be completely wrong about that. They could radiate evenly along the whole antenna. But I wonder if you could shed some light on that, because Richie's antenna now is at the house line, and he has aluminum foil backing behind his shingles on the side of the house. So the antenna is really looking at a wall of aluminum, and I thought getting it 15 feet above his house would bring what I perceive to be the radiation part of the antenna above his house and away from those shingles. But I could be wrong about that. I've always thought about it. What do you think? And to MB level.
I think you're right, Barry. Almost all of the modeling programs go through a whole elaborate procedure of doing finite element analysis, dividing the antenna into a whole lot of little pieces, calculating how much current is in the little pieces, adding up all of those currents as to the wave they create into space. So since the current is much higher in the center than the edge, and since the most of the computer modeling programs model the individual chunks of current, there is ample evidence that the center of the antenna seems to radiate more than the extremities. I think it's true. Not positive about this, though. Of all the articles I've read, I've been a 30-some-odd-year member of antennas and propagation, I don't remember seeing anyone saying how much radiation takes place from the center of the antenna versus the tip. There are guys that will put loading coils at the bottom. There are guys that will put the top hats at the top. And when it comes to compact antennas, does one work better than the other? And the jury is still out on that one. I think you're right. I think the center radiates more. But right now, I can't confirm it with anybody having done a real good study. I think it's possible to model the voltage on each point of the antenna instead of the current and figure out what's happening in the far field. I don't know of anybody's modeling program that does that. So for the time being, I'm going to vote with you that the center does more radiating than tips, and raise the center, get it away from the aluminum of the house. Altitude is always going to help. and go for it. Does he have the real estate by which you could slope the dipole and also move it slightly toward vertical? That would be fun. He probably doesn't have the real estate, but if you put up a tower for him, he could put up a sloper. Thank you, Barry.
Okay, yeah, I have mixed emotions about slopers. Anyway, the next question, I guess, would be that now Richie is going to take his dipole antenna and turn it into a forward dipole. That is going to take the high current points, and I don't know where they're going to put them. I don't know. My belief was that the high current points are what does the radiating, so on a regular dipole, that's a calculated point. Where is it on a forward dipole?
The forward dipole, the high current point, is in the exact same place, Barry. The portion of the forward dipole that you did not interrupt in the center is still the resonating thing that's doing the radiating. The other half that you've broken and you put leads into it, that is the impedance matching structure. And yes, it has much lower current. If it had the exact same current, it would be another piece of transmission line and no radiation would take place. So you have essentially zero current at the place where you're feeding it by relative compared to the center of the other half, the real dipole. He has a fierce current in there and he's doing all the radiating. If you're worried about radiation efficiency of a folded dipole versus a full dipole, they are identical. Identical pattern, identical efficiency, and whatever. And a hell of a lot easier to impedance match the folded dipole. So I think you guys are going in the right direction. Don't worry about where the radiation takes place. It's going to be in the exact same place. And get it up high like you guys want to. Does he have another antenna in another direction if he happens to want to, well, take it back. Because this is an inverted V, you do have not only horizontal, you've got a vertical component. You don't have the nulls at the end. And so he's essentially omnidirectional, just that he's different polarizations in the different directions. Back to you, Barry.
Okay, yeah, you just answered another question. I always thought that inverted Vs are still horizontal, even though the elements are bent down. I figured it was still horizontal polarization. You're saying that it actually does have a vertical component to it. That's interesting. I didn't know that. And that may explain why I'm getting so little difference between my vertical antenna and my horizontal antenna. I have an inverted V for 75 meters right now, and I have a vertical antenna for 75 meters, which is also an inverted V on its side. I see very, very little difference. Occasionally, I will see some difference between them. It's minor. And I think this may have some reason, because they're both really inverted Vs. One is this way and one is that way. They're pretty much looking the same, and I think that's what's going on here.
Yes and no. An inverted V antenna, broadside, is purely horizontal. There's almost no vertical component to it when you look at a broadside. In other words, if I set up the inverted V so that the wire itself goes from south to north, and you have the strongest radiation east and west. East and west, you're purely horizontal. If I look from the north, where you normally would have a null in the pattern if it was an ordinary dipole, now you see the vertical component. You're looking straight into the vertical portion of the antenna, so to speak. So, if from the north and from the south, it's almost purely vertically polarized. From the east and the west, it's almost purely horizontally polarized. A little hard to see how the vectors all add up when you're looking at it broadside and you're looking at this V-shaped thing. But take my word for it, it is 90-some-odd percent horizontally polarized broadside. The nice thing about it is because it doesn't have any null in any direction, an inverted V. So it's a darn good antenna. Back to you, Barry.
Yeah, that's very cool. Okay, I've always thought that my inverted V to the north, in my case, was working better than my dipole. I never could understand why, but I had that feeling because I'm hearing these rushes, and I just didn't hear them that good before. Now, my dipole was running almost north and south, almost straight north and south, which means the broadside was east and west, which is good for Europe and things like that. When I turned it into an inverted V, I also turned it a little bit, a few degrees, but it's really northeast by southwest broadside. So when you work the Russians, which are north and even further to the west, it seemed to outperform it, and now I have an answer why, because there is no null in that direction. Okay, you answer a lot. Oh, you pick it up, I'm going to listen because I'm in the car, and if I can put something intelligent into this, I will try. I don't know if I can. And to MV level.
Good sounding rig you got there in your automobile. What kind is it, Barry?
There you go. The mic button, there you go. It's a 706, one of those ICOM 706 Mark II things. Very nice radio. I'm very happy with it. I wanted a very low power because it does overheat if you run it on FM on VHF. But otherwise, it's real good. And it's better audio than my other radio, right?
The audio is darn good. Right now, I can't compare it. And I'm listening to you on the input, and you sound darn good. Okay. Let's see if Rich wants to add anything to us, and keep us informed as this project goes. Back to you, Rich, for a final.
Okay, Dick. Well, thank you very much. I think you've answered everything. I ordered the ladder line today and the hang-up hook online, so we shall keep you guys informed. Back to you, Dick, K2LIW, TechNet, Highmark, and 2EO.
Okay. Frank was the next guy, K2 Mike, Lima Mike, I think it is. Or is it Mike Lima Bravo? I'm not sure. Frank, you've got it.
Yeah, if I say Major League Baseball, it's easier to remember, right, Dick? K2MLB. Listen, one little comment about the dipole, and Barry's point about it being near the aluminum, of course, is significant, but I've got some nice trees here, and I've gotten my 80-meter dipole up 60, 65 feet in the ends in the trees, but I was very curious as I raised it throughout the years what it would do. Anyway, I modeled, you know, a half-wave dipole over average ground and lowered it from 60 to 50 to 40 to 30, etc. And I was quite surprised that I could get very low, down to 30 feet or so, and only have a few tenths of a dB difference in the gain. The pattern hardly changed. The SWR changed radically, but the antenna had to come down, as I recall now, something like 20, 25 feet before there were really significant losses compared to being up at 60 feet. So anyway, I just mentioned it.
Yeah, the main thing that happens as you lower it is that your vertical angle of radiation is going to change significantly. When you use one of those plotting programs, you can ask it to plot on the horizon, 20 degrees above the horizon, 40 degrees above the horizon, and so on. As your antenna gets lower and lower, you become a Nevis antenna, near vertical incident radiating system, or whatever it's called. You start radiating more of the signal straight up. And when it comes to very short range QSOs, and the ionosphere will support you, there's some advantage in doing that. But when it comes to the signal on the horizon, I'm relatively sure you lose as you bring it back down. When you're doing that plotting, are you fairly sure the program was plotting right on the horizon, or was it plotting above the horizon for that antenna? Back to you, Frank.
Well, that's selectable, Dick. One of the things you do is you select both the azimuth and the elevation angle that you want. So I tend to look at, you know, it'd be ideal if you could get it to be radiating down at 15, 20 degrees, which would be, you know, effective for DX like on 80 meters. But I tend to plot it at, just to see what it's doing, typically 20 degrees, 30, 45, and even though it doesn't help much, up to 60.
Yeah, when you start getting those very high elevation angles, you're really doing a plot for a very short range. How much signal, when it comes to the long-range QSOs that you might want occasionally, the DX contacts, what it's doing a few degrees above the horizon, that counts. And if you were doing a plot a couple of degrees above the horizon, I'm pretty sure you'd see a drastic difference between 60 feet of altitude and much lower altitude. Back to you, Frank, and I bet you had another real question. Is that true?
Yeah. In fact, I guess we're talking low-band stuff. Yeah, my question is something I just broached with you briefly a couple of years ago, and now I want to try and do something about it, and that's shunt feeding a tower. As I say, I've got a horizontal dipole up here in the trees. Looking at, you know, the handbook and some QST articles, there's some stuff in there typically on like a 75-foot Rhone, say an open lattice tower with a big tri-bander on the top. And they mentioned, the first part is that
they mentioned that the tower has an effective diameter of 30 centimeters, and then they are able to put a gamma wire almost up at the top there, anywhere from 1 to 3 feet away from the tower, you know, determine it experimentally, but they can get a long enough electrical length so that the thing will load it on 160 because of the capacitive top hat. Now, my question is, just to approach it, I happen to have, I guess you could call it like a little Telrex rotating mast, like a little Bertha. But basically, it's just a cylindrical mast constructed of tapered pipe sections, and it's like 13 inches or so down at the bottom and 4.5 inches at the top, 88 feet long. So when I just averaged out the taper and the sizes, it's an 8-inch average diameter. So my first question is, with a solid, let's say, equivalent of an 8-inch diameter pipe, how would that relate to what they call the equivalent effective diameter of a Rhone? In other words, when they say effective diameter, are they equating it to an equivalent solid steel pipe? That was just the first question.
This is Will. The way the RF behaves when it sees a lattice of a tower and you're down at a frequency like 80 meters, 40 meters, 160, whatever, and by law, the steps between the rungs of the tower are 18 inches. 18 inches, 1.5 feet, when you're talking about a 260-foot wavelength on 80 meters, it's not there. As far as the RF is concerned, it sees a solid chunk of metal. Your eye sees those details. If your eyes operated at 80 meters, you could barely see the tower as anything except this vertical dark object that's conductive. So for the RF to see the triangular 12-foot space of the tower as a equivalent 10-inch diameter thing, that's pretty easy for me to see that one when I put on my 80-meter spectacles, if you know what I mean, Frank. When it comes to is the equivalent diameter of the tower, 30 centimeters, as you said, for the real lattice tower versus the telescoping tubing, which is more like 8 inches, that makes a difference in the way you do the impedance matching for the gamma ratch, from the gamma matching setup. When it comes to the radiation itself, there is no difference. You look at all the good charts that are in Chapter 4 of Antenna Engineering Handbook, and you'll see immediately that monopole antennas that are 1,000th of a wavelength diameter or 500th of a wavelength diameter or 1/200th of a wavelength diameter, the pattern is identical, the efficiency is identical, the impedance match changes a little bit if you were feeding it from the bottom. You're feeding it by gamma, and therefore the ratio of the diameters of your gamma rod versus the antenna will make a little bit of difference. But as you properly adjust that gamma rod, it's series reactants, and if you're using a good antenna tuner, that makes no difference. The real efficiency of this antenna is going to be in your counterpoise, your ground plane. How many wires are in the ground, how far do they go, that's where the efficiency is really going to come from. That's what's going to separate the men from the boys. Now, I just heard that Ed, LCK, he may have a couple of comments on this one. Is that what you want to add to it, Ed? Ed, go ahead. Oh, I did hear Ed, ma'am. Maybe he keyed the mic on this frequency by mistake. So, you're going to get the exact same efficiency of radiation out of the 8-inch diameter of pieces of telescoping tubing versus the real tower. There'll be a little bit of difference in the way you set up the gamma rod, but that's just a matter of tuning and how you set the antenna tuner. After that, you got it made, and what's going to make this thing work is, what is the ground plane there, Frank? If you simply put a grounding rod in the ground near the tower, and that becomes the counterpoise, you'll be putting a lot of the RF energy into the earth, heating up the earth, and the worms in the wintertime will be very happy you're there because you're warming up the ground. If you put down a real good counterpoise, you will make a huge improvement in the amount of RF that goes into that ether and pegs at S-meter in Russia. K2MLB, K2LIW.
Yeah, okay, K2LIW, K2MLB. Well, Dick, that's the real reason that I haven't done this is because I don't have an elaborate ground system. I have Though I have one that I put in for an inverted L that I put at the tree, but that's kept me from doing it, and I guess no matter what I do with everything else, that's as you say, that's going to be the real key. The other thing that I just wanted to kind of ask is the data, you know, there's some nice charts available for tower heights and relative lengths of gammas and stuff based on, as I say, this 75-foot Rhone with about a 10-square-foot tri-bander up at the top. My tower happens to have an H-frame at the top with a lot of VHF stuff. You know, there's 4 2-meter antennas, 432, 1296, etc., plus three Yagis. And I've got about 35 square feet of antennas up there. So if anything, I guess that means it would be more capacitive top loading, but hopefully that would make the electrical length of the tower better, I guess, and the only negative thing might be if there's too much capacitive loading up there, the gamma might be shorter or something, but just like intuitively, the mere fact that I have that much aluminum up at the top, that shouldn't hurt me, I hope, in any way or prevent me from doing this.
Absolutely not. When it comes to a band like 160 meters, you can't get enough aluminum at the top. When it comes to a band like 40 meters, yeah, too much aluminum at the top might give you an antenna that instead of acting like a quarter wavelength long, starts acting like 5/8, which could be good. The main thing you're going to be doing with this antenna, Frank, is resonating it electronically. If you can make the mechanical lens plus the top hat a resonance, that's nice. You don't have to do that. By way of the way you set up the gamma rod and the way you set up your antenna tuner, in theory you can make that antenna super short, and if you've got a real good low-loss feed line, a good counterpoise, and a very healthy antenna tuner, you'll still get 95% efficiency out of it. So you want the antenna to be resonant. That's how it radiates. You resonate first, then you radiate. There's no book I know that says that, but it's electronic resonance we're talking about. And so you're resonating the radiating system, which consists of the thing you call antenna, which in your case is a tower with a bunch of aluminum on the top of it. The second thing it consists of is that gamma matching rod. The third thing it consists of is the feed line going out to it. And the fourth thing is the antenna tuner. All four of those objects in toto will hit resonance at your frequency, and then you'll radiate. And so as you make more and more of the resonance take place in the antenna tuner, that really means your feed line has to work harder. And if your feed line had any loss, the total loss you're going to get in the system will go up a little bit. On 80 meters, it's hard to get a feed line that's got too much loss that you're not going to get 95% efficiency, unless your coax cable was made out of polyethylene that's got contamination because it was built in World War II and it's been stored under salt water. In that case, you're in trouble. But shy of that, once you resonate this thing, you're not going to be able to stop it from radiating, and radiating well. And how well it radiates is a function of altitude above the ground, if it was a full half-wave vertical dipole, and in your case, the other half of the vertical dipole is the counterpoise, the mirror on the ground, and you'd like to make your mirror low in resistance and nice and reflective, and that means lay down quite a bit of copper. And even if your copper doesn't go out as far as you'd like to, because you'd have to go onto the neighbor's property, and you have to zigzag it going out there, not to worry, it'll work. Go do it, you'll be happy. Try it, you'll like it. K2, most, NLB, what did you say, something, Mike Lima Bravo, K2RIW listening.
Hey, that's what I say, Dick. Mike Lima Bravo and the guys come back and say something like Major League Baseball. I guess it's easier to remember. Okay, let me, one quick question. I don't want to hog things too much here, but I don't really see clearly the difference between an RF ground and a DC ground when I ask this. You know, this tower has climbing steps on it, just like a telephone pole. I'm too old to climb, so I have to get help. And let me put it to you this way. To, you know, go up and down, try it at 70 feet, take the wire, lower it 5 feet, etc., 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 would be very time-consuming. Let me just ask this. If I got somebody to go up and I can unthread a step, you know, it's a three-quarter threaded rod, the step is, so I could put in a 2 or 3 foot long just threaded rod in place of the step to be the gamma rod. But my question would be, would it be possible to put, say, three or four different rods at different heights, like I'm just going to say 60 feet, 50 feet, 40 feet, whatever, and drop the wires to the ground, and then somehow short out the unwanted ones and grid dip the one that I'm measuring, so that, in other words, can I effectively get those unused wires by grounding them or something, so that they won't affect the one I want to measure, to try and find the right point of the gamma with, you know, just one climbing venture, so to speak?
I see where you're going with that. And lay as many wires in there as you want, vertically spaced, one of them connecting to the tower at the 60, one at the 70, one at the 80, and so on, and they're parallel to each other. And when they come down to the ground, do not ground the unused ones. A gamma rod sitting there connected to nothing has absolutely no problem. It's not doing anything. And by the way, what you're trying to do by choosing the right gamma rod height, you could do that by a computer model, and you could study this whole thing ahead of time if you wanted to. It's not demanded that you do it that way, but you could study it with a computer program, and it may tell you that you're going to get the lowest standing wave ratio at 67.5 feet, so to speak. And your particular rods coming out, your climbing rods, one of them is slightly below that and one slightly above that. Not to worry. Your antenna tuner is going to take up the difference. The exact length of the gamma rod and what reactants you put at the end of it, some of these gamma systems have a variable capacitor at the end, that changes the standing wave ratio you see at the base of the tower. But that's not where you're feeding it. You're feeding it with a feed line into the shack with an antenna tuner. All you and I are discussing is your antenna tuner going to work a little bit harder or not work so hard because you make the thing perfect beforehand. It's almost academic. Every one of those gamma rods is going to work, and when it comes to the unused one, you wanted to ground it, let me think. If you grounded it to the tower, that's okay. It wouldn't hurt. If you grounded it to the ground, now you're making a great big tuning mechanism. It would be fun to experiment with that. It's not going to waste your power if you ground it. It wouldn't be there at all if the unused gamma rods were just hanging in space connected to nothing. They would have absolutely no effect. But then if you experiment with the unused gamma rods, connecting them to the ground plane in one case, connecting them to the tower in the other case, you're changing the impedance that the gamma rod that's active sees, and now you're building a shunt reactor in one case, and that could help in the tuning, particularly if you put a variable capacitor between the unused one, so to speak, and the counterpoise. You could have a lot of fun with that one, Frank. And if you discover something, I want you to write an article on it. I think we're slowly inventing something here. I do these kind of antenna tuning functions on little miniature antennas at 900 megs that every single day I'm tuning up as an occupation. And you'd be amazed how many various ways some of these are homely-looking impedance-matching devices. And as long as you use reasonably good coils and reasonably good capacitors, they work. And there are times when I'm making a capacitor at 900 megacycles by laying down a piece of scotch tape on top of a piece of copper foil and laying another piece of copper tape on top of that. And I'm making a capacitor where the dielectric material is the plastic of the scotch tape. And by how tightly I lay down the piece of copper tape on top, I'm determining how many picofarad I get. And as I push it with a little wooden stick, I can watch the capacitance change, and I watch the meters, and I say, aha, there's the right spot. You're in that neighborhood. You could have a lot of fun with this thing, Frank, by changing shorts, opens, and variable capacitors on the unused gamma rods, and I think you're about to come up with a superior feeding technique for your tower. K2, Mike Lima Bravo, K2RW. Let us know what you find.
Comment, Dick, KTKEY.
That's great, Dick. I can't tell you. I really smile because if the unused wires, as I say, by grounding them to the tower or leaving them hanging aren't going to affect anything, you know, I can get some help climbing and just put a bunch of wires up and then do everything that I need to do from the ground at my own pace. So that's wonderful. That's encouraged me maybe to go ahead. And you know what? I won't burden you tonight, but maybe next week we can talk about the ground. Thanks ever so much, K2RIW and the net, K2MLB.
Comment, Dick, K2KEY.
Yeah, Mel recognized. And hang around not long enough, Frank. If we run out of people to talk to, and if you can stay up that late, we'll go back to your particular subject. Mel, I wonder if you've built things like this, and I bet you had all kinds of variations on a gamma rod. And if you got a good enough antenna tuner, I bet you can make every one of them work. K2KEY, go right ahead.
Yeah, Roger. This is K2KEY. I did that experiment with shunt feeding the tower. And a couple of things I did observe. Number one, I originally tried it with just a wire coming down, and it did not work correctly. I wound up, the only way I got some really decent response was, first of all, I found that the distance from the tower of the gamma rod does have an effect. Also, I had to change over from a wire, I changed over to pipe, and I wound up using a 3/4 inch aluminum thin wall pipe, threaded pipe that is used for conduit, outside conduit, electrical conduit, outside stuff that's 3/4 inch, but it's threaded. And found that the only way to make it match is I had to put a matching network down at the base. In fact, I had rod coming down, and to insulate the rod from ground, I used a bottle, actually, a beer bottle, brown beer bottle. That was the, just to hold the bottom of the rod above ground. And I put the matching network down on the bottom. Of course, you got to be very cautious. That is hot, very hot down there. Electrically, from the RF point, it is extremely hot at that point. So if you have any little animals around, and all, you got to, put an enclosure around it. And I found when I put down the radials and all, I had down 80 meters zigzagged, of course, and all the radials just basically went all over next door neighbors and things like that. But of course, they migrate into the ground. That's the one thing that's nice. You can stretch them out. They'll just let you lay them there. During the growing season, the radials will disappear into the ground. I had down about 4 radials. It worked, but I think it could have worked better. And in conversations I've had, I have a whole bunch of specifications here on all the conversations I've had with people that did this in a more elaborate way. They told me that 4 radials really don't do the job. They found that to really get any kind of real great effect out of this shunt feeding, that they went to like 16 radials. So that's, I dismantled it and went into using the full one-way, loop antenna and systems like that, 80 meters. It was an interesting experiment, and I did pursue it for a while, Dick, but those were some of the effects. Like I say, the pipe, using pipe, and also distance from the tower and the radials all had definite effects. You just got to put that tuning network definitely at the bottom, Dick. K2RIW and the TechNet, K2KEY.
Yeah, when it comes to the number of radials required, Mr. Civic, W2FMI, had a whole series of articles on electrically small ground plane antennas in QST 10, 15, 20 years ago. And I think he's published a number of books on it. We can you can look them up as websites and so on. But some of his graphs, he literally plotted the efficiency of the antenna versus the number of radials on his ground in New Jersey. And more is better. Until you get to some number like 40 radials, you continuously see improvement as you make more and more radials in the ground. You're trying to have the spaces between the radials such a small fraction of a wavelength at the band you're operating at that the RF thinks it is a mirror. And so I'm guessing a 20th of a wavelength, and you can easily calculate, if it's 260 feet, 20th of a wavelength, 10 feet, yeah. If I could keep the tips of the radio 10 or 15 feet apart or closer, and bring them all together in the center, I've now essentially made that ground look like a chunk of copper as far as the RF is concerned. Very similar to what we and Frank and I were talking about earlier. His eyes see the 18-inch steps on that tower and all the airspace in between those vertical risers. The RF does not see that. I mean, 18 feet, 1.5 foot of 18 inches, 1.5 foot of wave, 1.5 foot of spacing to a 260-foot long wave, it's not there. It's a solid chunk of steel as far as that wave is concerned. And the same thing happens with the ground plane radials. because if any of the RF is able to sneak in between the radio, so to speak, and see ground, see Earth, then it starts coupling into it and you start losing some of the efficiency. When it comes to the pipe you had to use for the gamma rod, I'm guessing, Mel, that you did a number of experiments, and I think that one, yes, it worked, but I'm not sure it's a requirement. I think you could have used 8-gauge wire and made it work. The biggest variable in your case was what band were you on, how tall was the tower, and what was on top of it. That's the biggest variable. If the tower was 30 feet tall versus 70 feet tall, and if you got a lot of aluminum on the top as a top hat, an 80-meter, three-element Yagi, as opposed to just a 2-meter Yagi, here you're making the vertical portion of the tower with its top hat loading drastically different in what frequency it resonates on and how much tuning you've got to do to bring it on band. My guess is your basic tower was reasonably far away from quarter wave resonance. Therefore, your gamma rod and your impedance matching network had to work very hard. That's why you ended up with a pretty big diameter gamma rod and a very hard working impedance matching network, where you were putting a fierce amount of voltage in the bottom, and that's why it's so hot. So I'm guessing your case was a little bit more severe than Frank's. How tall was the tower? What band were you putting it on, Mel? K2KEY, K2I, WM the TechNet.
Yeah, this is K2KEY. Band was 80 meters, and the tower is 85 feet tall. The beam on top of it is a six-element wide space beam. And let's see, the wire I tried, initially I used number 12 wire, remember. And then I had some 10 wire, but that didn't seem to make any much of a difference. I didn't go down to number 8, truthfully. I wound up then going over to the 3/4-inch pipe. And also, like I say, moving it a distance from the tower is very important. The gamma rod cannot sit up close to the tower. It will not work right because it gives up capacity to ground the tower. Or I got the whole thing, this was done a number of years ago, I don't remember all the nitty-gritties about it, but there was a whole number of articles that were written, both not by Jerry. Jerry Civic W2FMI didn't write about, he wrote a very good articles on how short is short, you know, about verticals, foreshortened verticals and all, and the number of radials required for, you know, particular patterns. But there was another gentleman, I can't think of it, I have to look up, that wrote the whole series of articles on shunt feeding towers and how to compute by the size of your antenna, the height of the tower, and a whole bunch of parameters exactly what to do per band. In other words, basically, the people that were shunt feeding the towers were doing it for either 80 meters or 160 and 40. Yeah, 160, 80, and 40. And what really, he worked out a whole mathematical tables and the charts and all business. Quite an extensive study. I have it here. I can dig it out of the file if anybody's really, you know, interested in reading about it. I'm sure you could find it someplace. And it was a fascinating project, I tell you, Dick, but I guess the problem is getting enough radials down, and also, like I say, the situation, the bass tuning of it and all. What he did, he used a vacuum variable at the bass and with a motor drive system to tune it. It does need tuning if you move appreciably more than about 20 kilohertz either side. You're still going to have to touch up the tuning, Dick. That I remember distinctly. K2RIW and the TechNet, K2KEY.
Yeah, Mel, I got one quick question. 85 feet of tower, roughly how much aluminum was on the top of it?
It's a big antenna, I'll tell you that much. It's six elements, and it's four on 20, five on... My mic slipped here. 4 on 20, 5 on 15, and 6 on 10, Dick, over.
I see the problem. A half-wave dipole on 80 meters is around 130 to 135 feet long. A quarter-wave antenna on 80 meters is very close to 65, 66 feet long. So if nothing on top of the tower, and the tower was 65 feet tall, you would be right at quarter resonance. It would be easy as all hell to feed. You were not 65, you were 85, 20 feet too much, and a huge amount of aluminum on the top. You were not tuned to 80 meters. You were tuned to not 3.6 megs. You were tuned to 2.4 megs is the basic tuning of the antenna. Your antenna was very electrically long. And now by way of the gamma rod, you had to bring it up in frequency. You were moving toward a half wave monopole instead of a quarter wave monopole, and I could see why you had to work so hard. My guess is that antenna would have worked like a charm on 160 if you had enough ground plane radials under it. But your antenna was so down long, you had to pull it up in frequency, and therefore your antenna tuning network had to work very hard. That's what I think was happening. What do you think, Mel?
Well, I tried it on 160. It worked moderately well on, I would say great, maybe because I didn't have the right radials for 160. But I did the calculations. I remember I went through all the calculations and all and looked up at all the charts and everything. He gave everything for towers up to 125 feet tall, I think, with a number of different situations and all. I remember it was quite a detailed article. If I remember correctly, it was in Communications Quarterly, the article. It was a series of articles. I'm 99% sure it was in Communications Quarterly. Like I said, I could look up all the different, find it, and go through the nitty-gritties of it if anyone's interested. But I know I tried it on 80 meters, and it worked, I would say...